Moby Dick, or the Whale, by Herman Melville. Chapter 99. The Doubloon. Ere now, it has been related how Ahab was wont to pace his quarterdeck, taking regular turns at either limit, the binnacle and mainmast, but in the multiplicity of other things requiring narration, it has not been added how that sometimes in these walks, when most plunged in his mood, he was wont to pause and turn at each spot, and stand there strangely eyeing the particular object before him. When he halted before the binnacle, with his glance fastened on the pointed needle in the compass, that glance shot like a javelin with the pointed intensity of his purpose. And when resuming his walk, he again paused before the mainmast. Then, as the same riveted glance fastened upon the riveted gold coin there, he still wore the same aspect of nailed firmness, only dashed with a certain wild longing, if not hopefulness. But one morning, turning to pass the doubloon, he seemed to be newly attracted by the strange figures and inscriptions stamped on it, as though now for the first time beginning to interpret for himself in some monomaniac way whatever significance might lurk in them. And some certain significance lurks in all things, else all things are little worth, and the round world itself but an empty cipher, except to sell by the cartload, as they do hills about Boston, to fill up some morass in the Milky Way. Now this doubloon was of purest virgin gold, raked somewhere out of the heart of gorgeous hills, whence east and west over golden sands the headwaters of many a Pactolus flows. And though now nailed amidst all the rustiness of iron bolts and the verdigris of copper spikes, yet untouchable and immaculate to any foulness, it still preserved its keto glow. Nor, though placed amongst a ruthless crew and every hour passed by ruthless hands, and through the livelong nights shrouded with thick darkness which might cover any pilfering approach, nevertheless, every sunrise found the doubloon where the sunset last left it. For it was set apart and sanctified to one awe-striking end, and however wanton in their sailor ways one and all, the mariners revered it as the white whale's talisman. Sometimes they talked it over in the weary watch by night, wondering whose it was to be at last, and whether he would ever live to spend it. Now those noble golden coins of South America are as medals of the sun and tropic token pieces. Here palms, alpacas, and volcanoes, sun's disks and stars, ecliptics, horns of plenty, and rich banners waving are in luxuriant profusion stamped, so that the precious gold seems almost to derive an added preciousness and enhancing glories by passing through those fancy mints so Spanishly poetic. It so chanced that the doubloon of the Pequod was a most wealthy example of these things. On its round border it bore the letters Republica del Ecuador, Quito. So this bright coin came from a country planted in the middle of the world and beneath the great equator, and named after it, and it had been cast midway up the Andes in the unwaning clime that knows no autumn. Zoned by those letters, you saw the likeness of three Andes summits, from one a flame, a tower on another, on the third a crowing cock, while arching over all was a segment of the partitioned zodiac, the signs all marked with their usual cabalistics, and the keystone sun entering the equinoctial point at Libra. Before this equatorial coin, Ahab, not unobserved by others, was now pausing.
"There's something ever egotistical in mountain tops and towers and all other grand and lofty things. Look here! Three peaks as proud as Lucifer, the firm tower. That is Ahab. The volcano, that is Ahab. The courageous, the undaunted and victorious fowl, that too is Ahab. All are Ahab, and this round globe is but the image of the rounder globe, which like a magician's glass to each and every man in turn, but mirrors back his own mysterious self. Great pains, small gains for those who ask the world to solve them. It cannot solve itself. Methinks now this coined sun wears a ruddy face, but see, aye, he enters the sun of storms, the equinox, and but 6 months before he wheeled out of a former equinox at Aries. From storm to storm, so be it then, born in throes. 'Tis fit that man should live in pains and die in pangs, so be it then. Here's stout stuff for woe to work on it, so be it then.
No fairy fingers can have pressed the gold, but devil's claws have left their mouldings there since yesterday, murmured Starbuck to himself, leaning against the bulwarks. The old man seems to read Belshazzar's awful writing. I have never marked the coin inspectingly.
He goes below. Let me read. A dark valley between the mighty heaven-abiding peaks that almost seem the Trinity in some faint earthly symbol. So, in this veil of death, God girds us round and over all our gloom. The Sun of Righteousness still shines a beacon and a hope. If we bend down our eyes, the dark veil shows her moldy soul. But if we lift them, the bright sun meets our glance halfway to cheer. Yet, oh, the great sun is no fixture. And if at midnight we would fain snatch some sweet solace from him, we gaze for him in vain. This coin speaks wisely, mildly, truly, but still sadly to me. I will quit it, lest truth shake me falsely. There's now the old mogul, soliloquized Stubb by the tryworks. He's been twigging it, and there goes Starbuck from the same, and both with faces which I should say might be somewhere within 9 fathoms long. And all from looking at a piece of gold, which, did I have it now on Negro Hill or in Corollaire's Hook, I'd not look at it very long ere spending it. Ha! In my poor insignificant opinion, I regard this as queer. I have seen doubloons before, now in my voyagings, your doubloons of old Spain, your doubloons of Peru, your doubloons of Chile, your doubloons of Bolivia, your doubloons of Papillon, with plenty of gold moidras and pistoles and joes and half-joes and quarter-joes. What, then, should there be in this doubloon of the equator that is so killing wonderful? By Golconda, let me read it once. Hello! Here's signs and wonders truly. That, now, is what old Bowditch in his epitome calls the zodiac, and what my almanac below calls ditto. I'll get the almanac, and as I have never heard devils can be raised with dabble's arithmetic, I'll try my hand at raising a meaning out of these queer curvicues here with the Massachusetts calendar. Here's the book. Let's see now. Signs and wonders. And the sun, he's always among 'em. Hem, 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 Here they are, here they go, all alive. Aries, or the ram. Taurus, or the bull, and Gemini. Here's Gemini himself, or the twins. Well, the sun, he wheels among them. Aye, here on the coin he's just crossing the threshold between 2 of 12 sitting rooms all in a ring. Book, you lie there. The fact is, you books must know your places. You'll do to give us the bare words and facts, but we come in to supply the thoughts. That's my small experience so far as the Massachusetts calendar and Bowditch's navigator and Dabble's arithmetic go. Signs and wonders, eh? Pity if there is nothing wonderful in signs and significant in wonders. There's a clue somewhere. Wait a bit. Hist! Hark! By Jove! I have it! Look, you doubloon, your zodiac here is the life of man in one round chapter, and now I'll read it off straight out of the book. Come, almanac! To begin, there's Aries or the ram. Lecherous dog, he begets us. Then Taurus or the bull, he bumps us the first thing. Then Gemini or the twins, that is, virtue and vice. We try to reach virtue when, lo, comes Cancer the crab and drags us back. And here, going from virtue, Leo, a roaring lion, lies in the path. He gives a few fierce bites and surly dabs with his paw. We escape and hail Virgo, the virgin. That's our first love. We marry, and think to be happy, for aye, when pop comes Libra or the scales, happiness weighed and found wanting. And while we are very sad about that, Lord, how we suddenly jump as Scorpio or the scorpion stings us in the rear. We are curing the wound when whang comes the arrows all round. Sagittarius, or the archer, is amusing himself. As we pluck out the shafts, stand aside, here's the battering ram, Capricornus or the goat. Full tilt, he comes rushing, and headlong we are tossed. When Aquarius or the water-bearer pours out his whole deluge and drowns us, and to wind up with Pisces or the fishes, we sleep. There's a sermon now, writ in high heaven, and the sun goes through it every year, and yet comes out of it all alive and hearty. Jollily, he aloft there wheels through toil and trouble, and so aloe here does jolly Stubb. Oh, oh, jolly's the word for aye. Adieu, doubloon. But stop. Here comes little Kingpost. Dodge round the tryworks now, and let's hear what he'll have to say. There. He's before it. He'll out with something presently. So, he's beginning. I see nothing here but a round thing made of gold, and whoever raises a certain whale, this round thing belongs to him. So what's all this staring been about? It is worth $16, that's true, and at 2 cents, the cigar, that's 960 cigars. I won't smoke dirty pipes like Stubb, but I like cigars, and here's 960 of them, so here goes Flask aloft to spy 'em out. Shall I call that wise or foolish now? If it be really wise, it has a foolish look to it. Yet, if it be really foolish, then has it a sort of wise-ish look to it. But avast, here comes our old Manxman, the old hearse-driver he must have been, that is, before he took to the sea. He luffs up before the doubloon, hello, and goes round on the other side of the mast. Why, there's a horseshoe nailed on that side, and now he's back again. What does that mean? Hark! He's muttering, voice like an old worn-out coffee mill. Pick ears and listen. If the white whale be raised, it must be in a month and a day, when the sun stands in some one of these signs. I've studied signs and know their marks. They were taught me 2 score years ago by the old witch in Copenhagen. Now, in what sign will the sun then be? The horseshoe sign, for there it is, right opposite the gold. And what's the horseshoe sign? The lion is the horseshoe sign, the roaring and devouring lion. Ship, old ship, my old head shakes to think of thee. There's another rendering now, but still all one text. All sorts of men in one kind of world, you see. Dodge again. Here comes Queequeg, all tattooing, looks like the signs of the zodiac himself. What says the cannibal? As I live, he's comparing notes. Looking at his thigh bone, thinks the sun is in the thigh, or in the calf, or in the bowels, I suppose, as the old women talk surgeon's astronomy in the black country. And by Jove, he's found something there in the vicinity of his thigh. I guess it's Sagittarius, or the archer. No, he don't know what to make of the doubloon. He takes it for an old button off some king's trousers. But aside again, here comes that ghost devil Fadala. Tail coiled out of sight as usual, oakum in the toes of his pumps as usual. What does he say, with that look of his? Aha! Only makes a sign to the sign and bows himself. There is a sun on the coin. Fire worshipper, depend upon it. Oh, more and more. This way comes Pip. Oh, poor boy. Would he had died, or I. He's half horrible to me. He, too, has been watching all of these interpreters, myself included, and look now. He comes to read with that unearthly idiot face. Stand away again and hear him. Hark! I look, you look, he looks. We look, ye look, they look. Upon my soul, he's been studying Murray's grammar, improving his mind, poor fellow. But what's that he says now, hist? I look, you look, he looks. We look, ye look, they look. Why, he's getting it by heart, hist, again. I look, you look, he looks, we look, ye look, they look. Well, that's funny. And I, you, and he, and we, ye, and they are all bats, and I'm a crow, especially when I stand atop of this pine tree here. Caw, 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 ain't I a crow? Ha! And where's the scarecrow? There he stands, 2 bones stuck into a pair of old trousers and 2 more poked into the sleeves of an old jacket. Wonder if any means me, the complimentary poor lad. I could go hang myself. Anyway, for the present, I'll quit Pip's vicinity. I can stand the rest, for they have plain wits. But he's too crazy witty for my sanity, so I leave him muttering. Here's the ship's navel, this doubloon here, and they are all one fire to unscrew it. But unscrew your navel, and what's the consequence? Then again, if it stays here, that is ugly too, for when aught's nailed to the mast, it's a sign that things grow desperate. Ha, ha, ha! Old Ahab, the white whale, he'll nail ye. This is a pine tree. My father in old Tolland County cut down a pine tree once and found a silver ring grown over in it, some old darkey's wedding ring. How did it get there? And so they'll say in the resurrection, when they come to fish up this old mast and find a doubloon lodged in it, with bedded oysters for the shaggy bark. Oh, the gold, the precious, precious gold. The green miser will hoard ye soon. Hish, hish. God goes among the world's blackberrying. Cook, Oh, cook, and cook us. Jenny, hey, 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 Jenny, Jenny, and get your hoe cake done.
The end of Chapter 99. Read by Rick Kistner for Lit to Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.